I'd like to read a quote from Uchiyama Roshi's book, Opening the Hand of Thought, the chapter where he talks about the four Dharma seals. And in talking about that, in talking about the first Dharma seal of impermanence, he talks about the difference between sort of, what does he call, accidental reality and undeniable reality. And he talks about how accidental reality are things like that we're happen to be sitting here today in this Dharma talk, that it happens to be, like in St. Paul anyway, it looks like it's sunny out. Or even that we're happen to be born in this human body that we're born in. Like that, all those are all kind of accidental realities. But there is the undeniable realities that he talks about as well that we should understand. So here's the quote. The first undeniable reality is that everything dies. And the second undeniable reality is that we suffer throughout our lives because we don't understand death. The truth derived from these two points is the importance of clarifying the matter of birth and death. So that's really what the Dharma seal of impermanence points us to. The Dharma seal of impermanence and the Dharma seal of suffering points us to the importance of understanding and clarifying the matter of birth and death. So as I thought about this, I thought, okay, let's go to Zen Master Dogen, who had a lot to say about the matter of life and death, and also about impermanence. But I'm going to talk about what he said about life and death. So there's a fascicle called Uji, which is sometimes translated as life and death, sometimes translated as birth and death. I'm sorry, Shoji. Shoji is that one, life and death. Uji is the other one about being time. So Shoji, life and death, or birth and death. So here's Dogen. In the time called life, there is nothing besides life. In the time called death, there is nothing besides death. Thus, when life comes, it is just life. And when death comes, it is just death. So that is the Nishijima and Cross translation, but I'd like to read another translation, which is from the Shobo Genzo, edited by Kaz Tanahashi and translated by a whole bunch of people. So here's that one. In birth, there is nothing but birth, and in death, there is nothing but death. Accordingly, when birth comes, face and actualize birth, and when death comes, face and actualize death. So I like really both of these. They kind of have a little different qualities. It's good to know that when life comes, it is just life. So that kind of is like, there's nothing to do about it. When death comes, it is just death. There's nothing to do about it. But the other translation kind of gives us a little bit of a, there's a little something you can do about it. When life comes, when birth comes, you can face it and actualize it. So there's a little bit of a sense of turning toward it. And when death comes, you can face it, you can actualize it. There's this little bit of turning toward it. So yes, it's just there. And yes, we don't have to do anything about it. But if we're practicing, there's a subtle kind of energy in which we welcome what is arising. So the other day I was talking to someone about this, who said something like, well, maybe I'm deluding myself, but I don't feel like I'm so afraid of death. And they had a story about having a kind of a near drowning experience when they were a young person, and really, you know, being sort of pulled under by a current and not able to get to the surface. And at one point then, like, just really thinking, okay, well, maybe this is it. I'm curious that my life isn't flashing before my eyes, but it's not. But I'm trying as hard as I can. I can't seem to get up to the surface. And then thinking like, well, I guess if this is it, that's okay. So to me, that was really just a beautiful expression of, well, when death seemed to be coming, face and actualize it, like, here it is. But I thought it was also good that they had this little question of, maybe I'm deluding myself that I'm not afraid of death. Actually, what they said was, I'm more afraid of giving a Dharma talk than I am of death. So I shared, because this reminded me of a story that Dido Lori Roshi likes to tell, or he liked to tell, and he's since deceased. But Dido Lori was a student of Maizumi Roshi, and he told this story of being at Zen Center Los Angeles, or whatever incarnation of it was when he was practicing there. He said it was kind of like sitting in the lounge area, the living room, so sort of casual. It was during a break. And Maizumi Roshi came in and, you know, sat down. So they were just talking informally. And Dido Lori said something like, you know, I think I've really resolved the matter of life and death. I don't really feel afraid of dying. And he said, Maizumi Roshi, who was this little guy, like 5 foot something, jumped up, you know, like sort of across the coffee table, just like latched onto Dido Lori, who was a big guy, grabbed his neck and started choking him. And, you know, and then he's like, oh, and then let go. And he realized in that moment, it's like, I didn't want to die. So he had this idea like, oh, I've resolved it. It's, you know, I'm, you know. But I think what Maizumi Roshi was demonstrating is, don't die before your time. You're like, you're alive now. If someone comes at you, starts choking you, you better defend yourself, not just give up. Or like the person who was drowning, really trying hard. If she could get to the surface, wanting to get to the surface, then when it seemed like it's impossible, just saying, okay. So this resolving the matter is not something that our intellectual brain probably can figure out. And actually, Dogen has a little more to say about that as well. Well, first of all, I'll just read the last part of that quote that I shared. I'll read it again. In birth, there is nothing but birth, and in death, there is nothing but death. Accordingly, when birth comes, face and actualize birth, and when death comes, face and actualize death. Do not avoid them or desire them. That I think is really helpful. He goes on to say, this life and death, and the life and death is kind of written as one word. It's like with dashes. So life and death, both of them together. This life and death is just the sacred life of Buddha. If we hate it and want to get rid of it, that is just wanting to lose the sacred life of Buddha. Actually, let me read the other translation for this as well. This birth and death is the life of a Buddha. I like that, of a Buddha, because that kind of makes it be like it's not Buddha out there, it's a Buddha, which can be us as well. This birth and death is the life of a Buddha. If you try to exclude it you will lose the life of a Buddha. If you cling to it, trying to remain in it, you will also lose the life of a Buddha. And what remains will be the mere form of a Buddha. Only when you don't avoid birth and death or long for it, do you enter a Buddha's mind. And then he goes on to say, however, do not analyze or speak about it. So I have to say, I've failed. Do not analyze or speak about it. Just set aside your body and mind. I have to say he failed too, right? Because he's saying these things. So we're just trying in the human way to open to this unfathomable reality. Do not analyze or speak about it. Just set aside your body and mind and throw them into the house of the Buddha. The other translation says, let go of the body and mind and throw them into the house of the Buddha. So again, there's that, the letting go, you know, sort of nothing to do, just, you know, opening the hand of thought, just, you know, undoing the grasp, letting it drop. And yet there is a little something. Throw them into the house of the Buddha. So that seems kind of extreme, throwing, but it also could be like when you let go of something and you're just like, you know, you're throwing a Kleenex away in the wastebasket. Whoom. So you're just like that with your body and mind, whoom, into the house of the Buddha. Then all is done by the Buddha. When you follow this, you are free from birth and death and become a Buddha without effort or scheme. Who then remains in the mind? The other translation says at the end, who would wish to linger in the mind, which is kind of nice. But I also like who then remains in the mind. Because then that kind of starts pointing to or opening to that third Dharma seal of no separate self. Who then? Who's left? Who's remaining there? It's not like then we don't have a mind anymore, but there's no separate self that's remaining there. So this, of course, is hard to grasp because it's ungraspable. So sometimes I like to say, reading Zen Master Dogen is like you might read poetry. You just kind of let it come in. Every once in a while, something bubbles up and you have a sense of connection with the words and a sense of knowing in yourself, in your soul, in your bones. And sometimes it's not. It's just like, I don't get it. So then you just let the words be there like rain falling on you. And not worrying about it, trying to get it. And, you know, people who've read, especially Dogen or other Zen masters, you know, after a while, you kind of get familiar with their cadence and their style, and you kind of have a sense of knowing what they're talking about. But even when that comes up for me, I like to remind myself, like, I don't really know because it's unknowable. So be careful. So I tell myself, be careful. Don't be smug. Don't think you've got this figured out, because that's actually not helpful, you know, to think that I've got it figured out. It's more helpful to keep asking these questions. So part of entering into an understanding of life and death or birth and death is also more deeply entering into this understanding of what impermanence means and the flow of time. So for that, I would like to also loop back a little bit to Zen Master Dogen in the other fascicle that I mentioned, Uji, or Being Time. So there's, on the one hand, I'll say there's a sense, and it's important for us to recognize and to appreciate how the deep impermanence of time and that nothing lasts. So we're understanding that. But then there's another understanding of time, which is more timelessness, and that's part of it too. So here's, I think, what Dogen is pointing to. He says, do not think that time merely flies away. Do not see flying away as the only function of time. So I like that, because he's saying that is a function of time, flying away, but it's not the only function of time. If time, he says, if time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. The reason you do not clearly understand the time being, this is time being is the word uji that he's talking about. The reason you do not clearly understand the time being is that you think of time only as passing. In essence, all things in the entire world are linked with one another as moments, because all moments are the time being. They are your time being. Then he goes on to say, this time being has a characteristic of flowing. So flowing, flying, there it is. It's that characteristic. But then he says, so-called today flows into tomorrow. Today flows into yesterday. Yesterday flows into today. And today flows into today. Today flows into today. Tomorrow flows into tomorrow. Now that, I know for a fact that 25, 30 years ago when I first was encountering Buddhism, I would have done this. Get it. Hearing something like that, I kind of have a different feeling about it now. But really what he's pointing to, I mean, if we can even think about this with our logical mind, right? Because we can think about how I can be sitting here today and I can be having a memory of something that happened yesterday or longer ago. And so in that sense, today is flowing into yesterday. Or I can be sitting here today and thinking about and planning for something that's going to happen into the future. And so then that's today flowing into tomorrow, but it's also today flowing into today because I'm not there yet. I'm just in today thinking about it. So this is the way that he's talking about time being, where it's not things lining up in a certain sequential order. I mean, that's there too. And in another fast call, he talks about how firewood turns to ash, and ash doesn't turn back to firewood. So it doesn't actually, there is a way in which it's sequential and you can't go backwards, but there's another way in which it's flowing. And because we have a mind, then that enables that to happen, or us to awaken to that reality of the way it flows in all directions. So what do we need to do about time in order to really embrace this Dharma seal of impermanence and also the Dharma seal of suffering and hopefully the Dharma seal of nirvana too? So one thing is to realize when we do suffer, to not try to get rid of the suffering, instead to say what is here, what's happening, to really let it be there. So I like the way that Katagiri Roshi, the founding teacher in our lineage, talks about how to handle suffering, how to handle our delusions that come up and lead to suffering. And one thing I remember hearing that he said was, even our delusions have the right to exist. So not trying to get rid of them, but taking care of them. And here's what he says about that in relation to time. And this is from his book, Each Moment is the Universe. In daily life, we manifest the past as memory, heredity, or tradition, and the future as plan, prediction, hope, or perhaps ambition. And then we feel uneasy. We cannot ignore the past and future, but we also cannot ignore the fact that Buddhism tells us those manifestations are nothing but pictures drawn by our consciousness. So what should we do? How can we see real time? So here he seems to kind of be saying like, oh, well, these are just pictures. So, and these pictures, you know, are making us somewhat uneasy. And so there's kind of a sense of like, maybe I should try to get rid of them and just not have pictures and just have a pure, just a pure view. There's no past and future. I'm just living in the now. I'm right here. We might have that idea. But Katagiri says, we cannot see real time unless it is manifested in daily life. So in other words, it's sort of like the pictures, no problem. Because real time, he says, is nothing but function and process. So if we want to know real time, we have to learn what it is through everyday life. Your daily life is exactly the same as the source of human life. Being in the stream of time is exactly the same as being at the source of time. So I would just back up to say, your daily life is exactly the same as the source of human life. So this means, I think, with the looking at the Dharma seal of impermanence means we just embrace our life as it is, our daily life as it is, each thing as it arises. We're embracing, we're living, we're having that subtle turning toward. And knowing at the same time, we can know some of these things are just pictures in our mind, that they're delusions that we're creating, that there is a reality which is called, we could say, being at the source of time. He talks about the pivot point between time and being. You know, everything is there, past, present, and future, and all space is right there. So there's that. But it's not like escaping into that and everything disappears. And it's not like discarding or denigrating the day-to-day life that's our life. So this is what it means. Just seeing real time, seeing impermanence, seeing that pivot point is just embracing your life as it is. Sometimes it's not what we want to hear because we sort of want to hear that there's sort of a magic place that we can go and everything is beautiful and that it's somewhere else. But the thing is, there is a magic place and it is beautiful, but it's right here. It's right here. So seeing that right here is our practice, is, you know, we have the opportunity or the chance to do that. And to me in Sesshin, it can be that there can be an opening because there is sort of less other things going on. So we have a chance to sometimes, I mean, sometimes we get tense, we're sitting and it's hard work. It feels uncomfortable sitting still. But other times we can just relax within that. So it can be good to just keep cranking in a way, not gritting your teeth through it, but just say, okay, I'm putting myself in the form and then see what happens. So I feel like I'm talking a lot and it's really hard on Zoom because I'm not getting a sense of like where people are at. we could do a guided meditation, but maybe I'd like to just pause and see if there's questions or things that are troubling you or comments that you want to make before I move on. Yes, Kathleen.
I don't quite understand the sentence about face and actualize death. Did you say face and actualized death or face and actualize death?
The second one.
The second one. Thank
face
you.
Face it and actualize.
Pardon me?
It's like something that you're, it's kind of an energetic from your side. You're facing it. And I mean, he says actualize death, but really, it's both ways, right? I mean, you can't just actualize death. It's like death is arising and the actualization happens. And maybe it happens, it's going to happen anyway, but there's a way in which it really comes a lot. I want to say it comes alive. It gets really fully expressed when you are realizing it. So that's the actualize part.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Patricia, did you have something?
Yeah, I have a real basic question. Why are these called Dharma seals? Mm. What are they a seal of?
So my understanding of that is that it's the seal, the sense is that it's a, like the seal is a sign that this is an official document. So like that was from the, you know, like in the emperor's time, it's like there's a seal. And then you'd know, like, this is authentic. So the idea is that when these things are there, impermanence, no separate self, suffering, and nirvana, when those teachings are there, you know that's an, you know, that's an authentic teaching of Buddhism.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yes, Toku.
Thank you so much for your talk, Sosan. As we sat down for Zazen, a truck pulled up outside of my window, and it's a tree company, and they're taking down a tree that I absolutely adore. And so so I suffered mightily during the sitting as I could hear that. And when you started your talk, I stood up and I just watched that tree. I watched its death because I needed to witness it. And what happened was my suffering subsided, but the pain did not. What I needed to do was let this tender spot in my heart, the tender spot I have for that tree, I needed to just let it be sorrowful. Mm-hmm. To me, it's Resma's distinction between clean pain and dirty pain. My denial and my sense of outrage and my wanting to just get up and run over to the street, cross the street and throw myself in front of them gave way to just this sorrow. And that's okay. And that's okay. So anyway, I had a kind of a 3D experience of your talk.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think we'll add your tree to the names of those who have died for what we chant.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, Taizan.
So, I'm just curious.
Can people hear him? Yes, some. Okay, speak okay. As loud as you can.
Can I come closer?
I'll turn it this way, that might help.
Okay, so I'm just curious. You said, you know, it's not like there's some magic place someplace else, but it's here. Did I hear you right?
Mm-hmm.
Will you talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just, and then the whole that combined with actual, I think that has to do with like the whole idea of actualizing or that whole actualizing reality whether it's birth or death or whatever it is actually the being really present here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. My experience is that when I, to the extent that I can be fully present to whatever is arising, then there's a kind of deep beauty, and even magic that I experience as present. It's hard to explain. So I see that most vividly in certain ceremonies, in certain Zen ceremonies, but also I sometimes see it when I'm just like out for a walk or talking with a friend or sometimes meditating or reading. I mean, it can be, but it's not like I walk around in a daze, like, like that, because it's sort of like it comes in and out. It's sort of like if I only was there all the time, I would probably just, you know, wander into the street and be hit by a car. So it's like not really, I can't really exactly live like that. But now I've had enough of a taste of it that I have a deep trust that that's like something that's underlying everything. And so then from that place of trust, it's really a lot easier to practice. And it's a lot easier to let go of things that I find myself clinging to. And it's a lot easier to be happy. So that's all I can say about that.
Thank you.
Myoshin.
You can't see me under my mask. It's hard. Sosan gets no feedback from us either. I'm laughing, but Toku touched on this, but I remember you shared such a helpful teaching with me after I had a heart attack, and I was on that, you know, like life and death was a, like is a great matter. Pay attention, please. Mm-hmm. And you said, we talked a lot about how that biology of wanting to be alive, like that really strong, like I could feel that so strongly in my body. Like
mm-hmm.
it wasn't, so I wonder if you maybe could say a little bit about that, because I found that really helpful. Like we can clinging to it, but it's sort of like Toku just wanting that tree to live. Like we have this sort of deep, just it's encoded in our DNA to like be alive. And I felt that so strongly, but I didn't feel in that moment like I was clinging either.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's not like I said, oh, great, I think I'll die now. But I didn't feel like upset about what was happening either exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just was talking to think about that a lot.
Yeah, well, I think that's related to, you know, when there's life, then you just face and actualize life. That's what it's about. So it's not like getting ahead of ourselves.
No.
And I remember hearing also that Katagiri, when he was dying, or when he was sick, saying, I don't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, sort of like, give us the teaching, or I don't want to die. It's like, okay. And I also remember hearing him say, when Suzuki Roshi was dying, that, you know, all of the students were weeping and, you know, or no, they, no, the opposite. They were being really stoic, like,
right.
Oh, we're just receiving this death. And then Katagiri just, I think, like, seeing that that was bullshit, just, like, dropped onto his knees and started crawling towards Suzuki's bed, saying, please don't die, with tears streaming down. So it's like, you know, allow that life force to to bloom, allow that to come forward. Or like the person, the drowning, actually, she even said that because she didn't feel so attached to life, but she was curious, like, wow, my body's really yes. trying hard to live.
Yes,
this
yes.
is interesting, you know, and that, and she did, and she wasn't like letting go of that. She wasn't saying, no, you shouldn't be trying hard to live. She was like, yeah, I'm trying really hard. And yeah, this is interesting that my body's trying really hard. So yeah, we should try to be alive when we're alive. And then when it's, you know, when it starts to become a different story, then we can have a different approach. Then we can mm-hmm. say, okay, well, now actually it is death. Or sometimes when you're in a terminal illness kind of situation, you can flux. So there can be times when it's like, yes, I'm going to try these treatments and I'm going to do this. And this is what I can do today. And I'm alive. And then also to say, you know, I realize things are kind of breaking down and I can embrace that. So thank you. Yes, Mary.
I just want to say thank you for all of these comments and really just, I just want to thank you for everybody who has commented, and Sosan, for your words. Thank you.
Yes, I echo that. So would we like to do a little guided meditation, being in the flow of time? So I'll give you a little warning of what this is about, because this might not be everyone's cup of tea. So this is going to be a little bit, it'll be short, about 10 minutes. Be a little bit of active imagination. And so what we'll do is we'll do some active imagination of going forward in time around our body. I'm going to have us look at our hand. And just forward in time and till death, and then after, like that. And then we'll come back to now, your hand now, and then go backwards in time. You know, and so just as a way of like sort of connecting in your own body with the flow of time, forwards and backwards. And if this is something, if you feel like, no, I don't want to go there, you can put it on mute. And I'll bow at the end so you'll know it's done, and then we'll do the closing. And also, if at any time, like during the meditation, if it's like, wow, this is kind of too much, triggering something in me, just go ahead and turn your speaker off so I won't be heard at all. So, all right. So this is going to be a best meditation with your eyes open. So begin with just settling into your body. Feeling your connection to the earth, the contact points of your feet and legs and seat. Feeling your upright spine. Allowing your rib cage to be open. Allowing your face to be relaxed and noticing your breathing. And just connecting with the feeling of being alive as you notice your breathing. And now take and hold one of your hands in the other. You might want to have your non-dominant hand be the one that's holding up the other hand. And then just bring that hand to a little about at your heart level or a little above. And just gaze at your hand and appreciate it. This hand that has done so many things for you, buttoned your clothes, held your eating utensils, caressed the face of a loved one, and just allowing a deep gratitude for this hand. And you might notice that this hand looks a little older than it did, perhaps the last time that you considered it deeply. And so now just imagine it getting even older still. Imagine it being more wrinkly, maybe more veins popping out. And just using your imagination to have it get older and older, more and more withered. Stay connected with your breath and your belly as you do this. Notice if feelings of sorrow or sadness arise. And just being kindly present to that with love for yourself. And now imagining this very old hand is the hand of the person who has died. So you have died and now you're gazing at your hand. And as time goes by, this hand now will decay. Eventually, all that you'll see are the bones. Continuing to stay connected with your breath in your belly and in your whole body as you contemplate the bones of your hand. And as more time goes by, even the bones will not last. So you can imagine them starting to crumble and turning to dust. And just blending in with the soil. And now letting your hands float down to your lap. And you could just ask, let the question arise, where are you now? So there is a you thinking about this. And there's also a you of the future just turned to dust. And as you contemplate this, remembering to connect with your breath and your belly and feel the stability of the earth supporting you. Now bring your hands up to your heart area again. This time, have your dominant hand holding your non-dominant hand. So switching. So breathing and gazing at this hand as it is right now, as it appears right now. And then considering perhaps the last time you really considered this hand, it might have looked younger. So using your imagination to see it as that younger hand. And then go back even further in time, that maybe the hand of you as a very young adult. So that if there were wrinkles on your hand, you're seeing them smooth out now. The skin is softer. And now, seeing if you can imagine that hand as the hand, as your hand of a child. And now your hand when you were a baby. And now that hand as it was still forming in your mother's womb. And now that hand before it was a hand, when it was just an ovum. And even before that, now just letting your hands float down to your lap. Connecting with your breath and your belly. And where are you now? There is the you in this room and the imagined you before you were born. So this is one way of being present in the flow of time backwards and forwards. We can simply breathe and feel ourselves in the midst of this. And now just letting go of these ideas. If there is one idea that remains, it could be perhaps the idea of throwing ourselves into the house of the Buddhas.